Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're going to do two short call-ins now. First, we'll open up the phones to Catholics for your reactions to the latest revelations and conclusions from that Pennsylvania grand jury about the extent of sexual abuse of minors by priests and the extent of the cover-up by church higher-ups. It's really the extent of the cover-ups that's most new here, even though the numbers themselves are shocking. More than 1,000 children abused over a 70-year period, and the grand jury says that's just the ones they were able to document. There's probably a lot more than 1,000. And I guess my question is, how do you still call yourself a Catholic? Or how do you still go to church? 212-433-WNYC, Catholic listeners, 212-433-9692. And I don't mean this in a snarky way at all or an anti-Catholic way. I'm not a Catholic, but I'm not trying to pry anyone out of your religion. But I'm just curious how you deal with it. If you stay identified, if you stay involved, if the institution itself is this rotten and this hypocritical with respect to the values of, you know, doing unto others that Jesus and God are supposed to stand for, how do you still call yourself a Catholic? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And how does this new set of revelations land with you? Are you feeling them emotionally with any new disgust? Or is it all kind of baked in at this point for you with all that had already become known over the last almost 20 years since the first wave of the scandal became known? I'll say behind the scenes here, we had this conversation in our production meeting yesterday. This thing came out from the Pennsylvania grand jury. It's so horrible, but we sort of knew this. And yet we decided to talk about it anyway and ask you this question. And here's just a little bit of what came out for those of you who haven't seen some of the gory details here. Reading from one of the New York Times articles on this today, headline: Pennsylvania grand jury says church had a playbook for concealing the truth. It says avoid scandal, use euphemisms, ask inadequate questions, lock complaints away in a secret archive. Above all, don't tell the police. And the grand jury said, quote, it's like a playbook for concealing the truth. While each church district had its idiosyncrasies, the pattern was pretty much the same. The main thing was not to help children, but to avoid scandal. That is not our word, the grand jury says, but theirs, the church's. It appears over and over again in the documents we recovered. And one other thing on this, one of the excerpts that the Times printed from the report, again, this is the words of the grand jury. What we can say, though, is that despite some institutional reform, individual leaders of the church have largely escaped public accountability. Priests were raping little boys and girls, and the men of God who were responsible for them not only did nothing, they hid it all for decades. Monsignors, auxiliary bishops, bishops, archbishops, cardinals have mostly been protected. Many, including some named in this report, have been promoted. Until that changes, we think it is too early to close the book on the Catholic Church sex scandal. Unquote from the Pennsylvania grand jury report. So that's sort of the context of my question. How do you call yourself a Catholic today if you called yourself one yesterday? And if the book is still this open on the church sex scandal, how do you, as a Catholic, feel about it today? Is the rawness of whatever emotion you've had toward this been reopened? Or are you like, ugh, it's so bad, but I knew? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now to your calls, if you're Catholic, on how you're processing the latest shocking, even though it's hard to be shocked anymore, revelations about the Catholic Church sex scandal. And Jay in Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Jay, thanks a lot for calling.
Good morning, Brian. I had 16 years of a Catholic school, worked at a Catholic high school, worked in my parish rectory as a teenager. I dealt with a lot of priests, brothers, nuns over the 40-something years of my life. You know, thank God I never noticed anything as described in this Pennsylvania report. But, you know, they have good and bad qualities just like all of us. Some were great people. Some were complete jerks. And how I've been dealing with the crisis is how I've been dealing with the last, you know, probably two decades that this has been in the news. I've been really looking more inward at my parish and just trying to keep my local parish community together and cohesive and productive and, you know, in this day and age, too, financially viable because mm-hmm. so many parishes are closing due to financial constraints.
And financial constraints were an issue that the grand jury cited, or at least financial concerns, prompting church officials to cover up some of these crimes. And when you talk about, like anybody else, there are good people, there are bad people, yes, but I think what the report emphasizes is that it's not just a question of individual bad apples. There was such institutional rot to the core when it came to this issue.
Yes. I mean, you know, the Catholic Church has never really been an organization to listen to its members, and this goes well beyond the sex abuse scandal. You know, I had to deal with a parish closing, and the archdiocese was very heavy-handed in dealing with the issue and did not really take the concerns of the parishioners into account. And, you know, so it goes well beyond this. They don't listen to their members, and it's very heavy-handed and very hierarchical, as I'm sure, you know, we can imagine.
So to finish the thought on why you stay in, what's the good that you're doing, even as you roll your eyes and worse over the way they deal with even your local parish?
You know, the good is a lot of the pastoral care. You know, the church, you know, well, organized religion still deals with a lot of the large issues that we all encounter as humans. You know, birth, death, sickness, you know, family joy, family tragedy. And, you know, there is a level of pastoral care there. And it's not always from the ordained. It's a lot of times it's from the laity. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the good that it provides, you know, elderly people. And I've seen the good that it provides, you know, even marginalized people, you know, people of color. You know, we have a thriving Latino community in our parish. And it's just thrilling to watch. And, you know, it. I concentrate on that. I concentrate on the good right. works that my local parish does.
Jay, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. And, of course, yes, it's the Latino population that's growing, the Catholic population in the United States right now, while it's shrinking, I believe, among whites. Here is Father Ken in Pompton Plains. Hi, Father Ken. You're a priest?
Good morning, Brian. Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. I liked what I heard from the previous caller. I've been a victim's advocate for 30 years, and I welcome the report from Pennsylvania, and I think a grand jury report should be initiated in every state in the union, and I think a similar pattern would emerge. I still remain faithful to the church. The Eucharist is the center of my life, and as the previous caller pointed out, there are many services and many issues that the church promotes, not the least of which is immigration. But this is a serious issue, and it needs to be unpacked. I worked on a particular case for almost 13 years, and it has yet to be revealed, but it will be. The story will be told in due time.
Let me ask you if you think, as a, you describe yourself as a priest advocate for sex abuse victims.
Yes.
How much is it over? How much is this about unearthing what took place in the past? But after, I don't know what the demarcation line would be, maybe it's 2002 when the first of these scandals broke in Boston. But since then, has it largely ended in terms of it, and there's always going to be bad individuals, but in terms of it being this institutional or widespread, like 1,000 kids in 70 years in Pennsylvania that the grand jury documented.
Yeah, I don't think it's as widespread. I think there are still there are indicators that there are still abusers out there because it's a sickness. And the Dallas Charter doesn't necessarily deal with somebody who's sick, and particularly if there's a cover-up with regard to that. But we haven't even opened the door on the abuse of adults. Many, we're dealing with of those who are above 18-year-olds. And there are victims of priest abuse for 18-year-olds and older. Huh. And we haven't even dealt with that. The McCarrick scandal has opened the door on it, that's for sure.
Yeah. What do you think needs to change? What more, other than shedding light on this? Does the priesthood, the rules need to change? Should priests be able to get married?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a part of it. I don't think that's the sole reason for the abuse, but I think that certainly is a factor. I'm a canon lawyer, and I think that the law as it presently reads definitely protects the church and clergy. I mean, there's a canon in which the directive to look into the life of the victim to find out if there's anything there that would have precipitated abuse. That's absolutely incredible.
Father Ken, thank you very much for calling in. Flo in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hi, Flo.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I spoke with the lady who's accepting the calls. Just very briefly, my mother had the terrible misfortune to be left in an orphanage in Dublin with her three sisters, and they were abused, they were hungry. They did not say there was sexual abuse, but there was certainly physical. But I'm just horrified at it all. I mean, the far-reaching consequences of what happened to those little girls, you know, settled into their raising their own children, and they tried to be loving mothers, but they were damaged. And I refer myself to being a recovering Irish Catholic. I was born in Dublin, but I grew up in London, and I've been in New York almost 40 years, and I am just horrified at this. It's despicable. You know, they talk about confessing one's sins and repentance and, you know, blah, 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 and yeah. It continues with the lying. I mean, these men are celibate, so to speak. They should be allowed to marry. The rules and regulations they impose on the Catholic people is horrendous, and they take no responsibility. And that's the part that just enrages me. It is time. It is well overdue for them to come to the court, you know. And
right. Well, maybe more of them will after this. And, of course, on coming to the courts, another issue raised by this report is the statute of limitations on some of these crimes. Let me just ask you, Flo, and I guess, you know, we should also say married people abuse people too, but if the rules of your profession prohibit you from having any kind of sexual relationships in your life, then maybe it leaves you more at risk for that. I guess that's for a deeper dive on another show. But Flo, for yourself, since this happened to your mother, so you grew up with this, you know, ingrained in whatever way from the beginning, and you call yourself a recovering Catholic, and I've seen T-shirts that say that, so it's like cat-holic, you know, like alcoholic, would you, holic, if that's the joke on that recovering Catholic T-shirt. But what have you done for religion?
Very briefly, want to tie it up. I was fortunate. My mom was only in there for 4 years. She went in when she was 10. But one of my aunts was only four. And so she spent 10 years with this horrendous conditions that they lived mm-hmm. in. I just want to wrap it up because I know people are waiting. But it's time. It is real time for them to be called up. And, you know, in Ireland, the church has lost all of its power. It's gone. They still send them to Catholic school because they get a decent education. But believe me, the churches are not full on Sundays, and they don't get that much money.
Flo, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it very much.
Teresa in Mamaroneck. You're on WNYC. Hi, Teresa.
Oh, hi, Brian. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for making it.
I grew up in Pennsylvania and went to Catholic school for 12 years in the 60s and 70s. And in growing up, what I would witness would be nuns brutalizing kids, boys and girls, beating them with pointers and slamming their heads into blackboards and all of that. I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes with the priests at that time. But as a child, I just knew that I needed to make religion personal for myself. And another caller had said that there were good nuns as well, and the teachings of the Bible, I took all that internally and made it my own practice. In my parish, one of the priests was one that was called out on abuse, and he was then sent to Boston, as a lot of the priests had, you know, as that had done. So I just wish there would be some attention paid to the physical abuse of the nuns.
Teresa, thank
you. Nothing was done about that.
Thank you very much for raising that, which also suggests the question of why women can't be priests and how close they'll ever get to dealing with that. Listeners, thank you for your calls on being a Catholic on the day after the Pennsylvania report.